And now,
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I am Tawanda Henry Mitsi. And welcome to another podcast of the premier political podcast in Zimbabwe and beyond, now in London town.
Yes,
you're
just putting my business out there. Yes, we keep relocating, obviously, you know, now that we have a new dispensation.
a truly new
dispensation. Before I think the last episode there hadn't been a swearing in court case, all of that hadn't happened. So now we have a truly new dispensation, and we want to be closer to the center of power.
In London.
Kaka, auntie no kune Zimbabwe embassy.
No kune ten down street.
Exactly. Also, who's pulling the strings, ka? We have a new ambassador coming, ka, from the UK. So.
And then Lord Haynes' ad agency is based in London as well.
What are you saying about this? What is this ad agency? I'm not sure what you are talking about.
I mean, I just see people writing letters in the Mail and Guardian and Financial Times, and I wonder how they get their access.
It's a new dispensation, Ka. We are re-engaging with the international community.
Yeah. On that note, swearing-ins, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, today we'll touch on a couple of things. We swore in ministers. We didn't swear them in. Ministers were chosen. They'll be sworn in on Monday, so we'll discuss the new cabinet. We'll discuss the open quotes, people's president, closed quotes, Nero and his moves and some of the things that are happening there. And we will discuss the new parliament.
Yeah.
The ninth parliament and what is expected of it in brief at the end. So we can jump straight into it.
Who are our cabinet ministers, Mr. Charamba?
So we have... Oh, no, now, and then the list decides. Okay, there we go. We're back up. So, finance and economic development, we have Professor Mthuli Ncube. Defense and war veterans, we have Opa Muchinguri Kashiri. Local government, public works, national housing, we have July Moyo. Foreign affairs, international trade, Sibusiso Moyo. Public service, labor and social welfare, Sekesai Ndenza. Industry and Commerce, Mangaliso Ndlovu, Home Affairs and Cultural Heritage, Kane Matema, Higher and Tertiary Education and Science and Technology, Professor Amon Murwira, Primary and Secondary Education, Paul Mavima, Lands, Agriculture, Water, Climate and Rural Resettlement, Air Marshal, Chief Air Marshal, Parents Chief.
But shouldn't say retired Chief Air Marshal, Parents Chief.
Yes, that's the one.
And then Mines and Mining Development, you have Honorable Winston Chitando. Energy and Power Development, Joram Kumbo. Transport and Infrastructure Development, Joel Begim Tizwa. Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services, Honorable Monica Mchangwa. Information, Communication, Technology and Courier Services, Honorable Kazembe Kazembe. Environment, Tourism and Hospitality and Industry, Priska Mfumira. Youth, Sports, Arts and Recreation, a name I can pronounce, Christy Coventry. Health and Child Care, you have Dr. Obadiah Moyo. Justice and Legal, Parliamentary Affairs, Ziyambi Ziyambi. Women Affairs, Community, Small and Medium Enterprises Development, Honorable Stebisio Nyoni. And then we have Minister of State and Provinces. Harare is blank, on noticeably. Bluewe is Judith Nwe. Mashonaland West, Mary Muliswa. Go ahead. You can take Mashonaland East.
Mashonaland East.
Apollonia
Munzwerengi. Mash Central, Monica Mavunga. Manicaland. Yes, Manicaland, Ellen Gwaradzimba, Midlands, Larry Mavima, Mashingo, Ezra Chadzamira, Matt South, Abednego Ncube, and Matt North, Richard Moyo. Then you have two ministers of state in the offices of the vice president. Honestly, still wonder what these people do. But in Vice President Chiwenga's office, you have Evelyn Ndlovu. Mm-hmm. And in Vice President Mohadi's office, you have Davis Marapira. And then we have 13 deputy ministers, defense, Victor Matemadanda, local government, Jennifer Mklanga, public service, Love Moma Tuke, industry and commerce, Rajesh Modi, home affairs and cultural heritage, Michael Madiro, primary and secondary education, Edgar Moyo, lands, there's two, Douglas Karoro and Vangelis Haritatos, mines and development, Polite Kambamura, energy and power, Magna Mujikiwa, transport and infrastructure, Fortune Chasi, information, energy, Mutodi, that's information publicity, and then information communications technology, Jerifan Muswere, youth sports, arts and recreation, Yokai Simbani Gali. That's it.
Bringing the total list to 45.
That's your. So there's 14 plus 2 is 16.
It's 45 altogether.
Plus 10.
Without Harare, so it's actually 45
or 46. Plus there's 2 ku lands and water.
Oh yeah, you're right. Actually, you're 46.
So 46 minus Harare, so 45 currently.
Yeah, 45 currently. And which, I mean, I haven't done my research, but it's comparatively leaner than the last.
I suppose under Mugabe you had 33 ministers, and that's just ministers.
So altogether, I'm sure it's significantly leaner.
But I think just off the bat, deputy ministers, I don't think are necessary. I wouldn't have included deputy ministers. You can go with 20 cabinet ministers, and then I think at the public service level, or at the civil service level rather, you then compensate there. So if you need people, you know, you have your principal directors to run the ship in that regard.
Yeah,
but you know,
you'd assume for something like agriculture, you'd need strong people running things like GMB, running the, you know, tobacco auction floors. Those prior state organizations are essentially deputy ministers, and the minister should be working really close with them. And that's how most countries generally run it, is, you know, appointments, your appointments, your Reserve Bank governors essentially translate, as an example, as a Reserve Bank governor, you'd have the similar type of appointment structures across the parastatals and things that fall under these line ministries. But why was Harare left out? Let's start there, and then we can talk about the more interesting appointments.
I actually have no idea. I suspect it could be a couple of things. One is, you know, obviously ZANU-PF not big in Harare, so who do you appoint there? But I think it could also be leaving the post open to then make a justification for leader of the opposition in Nelson.
Or alternatively, you could. This is going to seem personal, but it's not. But the other conspiracy theory from the opposition side is that they're expecting a conviction and a by-election in Harare very soon, from a former minister's constituency.
Okay.
So the Harare is being left open for Terence Mokope.
This is what the
opposition grapevine is going, but I think that justification for leader of opposition is as good a conspiracy theory as I've heard.
Yeah, it was my first thought. I don't know how. I have not confirmed or verified with anyone, so I just thought, you know, they're leaving it open so that they can find a way to fiddle with it. But we'll see. We'll get more information as time goes on. Overall, just the make of it, I like it. I think that this cabinet is a lot different in a lot of respects to the cabinets that we've had before. And there are obviously key ministries that needed to have the right people, and I think some of them definitely
got
the right people. So we'll start obviously with finance, economic development. Professor Mthuli Ncube, you know, his CV is solid. Quite impressive, quite extensive. He's, you know, got PhDs from Cambridge in financial mathematics.
He's been a lecturer at Oxford.
You know, worked at the AFDB. He's lectured at Oxford. He's, you know, chief economist and vice president of the AFDB. So he's well accomplished, and I think that's what we need in the finance ministry right now. Our economic situation is in dire straits, and it needs somebody who will give it the requisite level of attention, and I think he's definitely got the profile to do so. Whether he'll be allowed to make the tough decisions, I mean, he's come out and said that we need to scrap the bond note.
Yeah,
that's one of his recommendations. I'm not sure how that translates
to a policy,
or in the immediate, whether that's something that can be done without increasing productivity and ensuring that there's enough US dollars in the market to cover the gap. But obviously,
because he
must have a plan. You know, like I'm not the one to come and tell somebody with his level of qualifications that no, he shouldn't do it, because he obviously knows what the risks are involved in such a decision. But I'd like to believe.
Yeah, that's my question: is he knows what the risks are from an outsider's perspective? I think when you get into the office and you are presented, because there's brilliant economists at the Ministry of Finance, they are there. They've been there. Some of the smartest people in Zim work in that ministry. When you are presented with the facts, you might find that ideologically what you had decided to do might be a lot more difficult than it was when you're outside and you're looking at it from, you know, a semi-insider's perspective. Obviously, he would probably have been getting some information, but he might not really know how deep a hole Zim is in, which a lot of people sometimes, we, you know, there's lots of things we don't know.
That's
and then
true.
There's and also competing interests as well in terms of how, because it's a political appointment at the end of the day. The policy is going to be crafted at ultimately at presidential level, at cabinet level, they'll discuss it, but also president answers to Politburo. So how he's going to have to balance that? It's a balancing act, and I don't know how he's going to be able to do that.
It most certainly is a balancing act, and I appreciate that. You know, there's definitely stuff that he's not aware of. But again, I hope that when he has a full appreciation of the situation that we're in, he can also adjust his thinking to what needs to be done. And I'm sure that whatever plan he comes up, I hope that whatever plan he comes up with, he's allowed the space to actually do some of the things that he needs to do. So, for example, we need to cut our expenditure. You know, the budget needs to, the percentage of the budget that goes to paying
salaries.
Workers needs
yeah.
to salaries needs to come down, which means one of the tough calls is people need to be fired from the civil service.
And the
Zimbabwean
government
is
the biggest employer in the country.
It is.
Econet is the second. So it's going to be tough. And that's an unpopular decision. And
a very unpopular decision, but there's only so much that they can do without doing
things like
without making such a sacrifice. And I hope that, you know, it's a tough call. I hope that they're willing to make it and find a way to do it systematically. And, you know, whether I wouldn't know, I wouldn't want to be in such a position.
Yeah.
But it's what the country needs. If
you
we're
know,
looking towards the long term future, it really is what we need.
You know, I'm the one reason I'm afraid of this appointment. From I think people that listen to the podcast, it's not going to be the usual. I'm very for this cabinet, so it's not going to be the usual backwards and forwards. I'm actually more afraid of the fact that he's a technocrat, the fact that he's independent. If in 3 years' time we've had some form of recovery and then there's a sticking point with him and he resigns, that it would be such a massive hit to the Zimbabwean economy. It's actually such a mass. If he does job to the level that I expect him to do, and to the level that I hope he'll be able to do, and he then gets to a position where, you know, we saw, what's his name? Uyuweku, South Africa, the finance minister when he was fired by Zuma. We saw how much that affects the economy. So it's a confidence building thing, putting him there. But if you can't keep him there, which I'm afraid ZANU can't do, if you can't keep him there, by being flexible, by being malleable, if the politics overtakes, as we've seen in other, you know, in either technocrats that have come into similar roles, if they can't keep him there, the level of damage it will do to a ailing and recovering economy is going to be catastrophic, and that's my biggest fear of this. So I'm not even afraid of him being able to do job. He will be able to do it. I'm more afraid whether ZANU can keep him in that job.
And those are something. Those are some of the things that, you know, are important. But I do suspect that this such an appointment has been made with the IFIs and with our new old foreign friends
in mind.
In mind, and I say this because so the United Kingdom is sending a new ambassador.
Do you know who
Melanie Rob? Melanie Robinson. She starts in January 2019. But her career has been spent at DFID, which is Department of Foreign International Development.
Yeah.
So it's essentially their aid and
USAID. It's the British aid.
British equivalent of aid and development. That's where her career has been. And she was the World Bank Group Washington Executive Director for the UK. So this is a targeted appointment. They're not sending somebody who's coming to just be an ambassador and, you know, have relations. They're sending somebody who's coming to this is a developmental project, a World Bank project. Make sure, I think, that we get our books in line in terms of the IFIs, and also she's there to protect British interests. It's clear that the British are interested,
but not to protect, putting to money build into British interests.
To build and protect and make sure that we have all our macroeconomic
ducks in a row.
Factors, in a row and aligned to that then happens. They know that they have that security. So I think these things are aligning, and it seems that they're all quite coordinated to
me. Yeah. Talking about coordinated appointments, Minister of Youth is a youthy.
Kitsi.
Kiri.
Mudidim kuru.
Kiri. Oh, man.
Yeah, that, I think, was the biggest shock and biggest surprise of this cabinet.
It's a no-brainer.
Well, yes, no, obviously it makes complete sense. I would have done it. It Olympic gold medalist, decorated African Olympian. Right. Young, a celebrated individual. She's no one in Zimbabwe has anything bad to say about Kirsty Coventry. And if you do, you're just a hater. That's it.
Yeah, and to use the word that's been bastardized by your party, she's patriotic in the truest sense of the word.
No, she really is. In the truest sense of the word.
She's been a champion for Zim even in the toughest times. And
yep.
And yeah, I mean, look, I have no... We don't even have to spend much time on her. In terms of running a ministry, I don't know how she's going to be able to deal with the Chiangwas of this world, with the cricket boards, with all those people. That's probably her biggest challenge. And then obviously with your youthies and her AC and her ZYC, I don't know how she's going to be able to deal with those people. But in terms of everything else, I'm sure she'll be okay.
Now, that's the thing. I think, she definitely has a lot to deal with in different spheres. But I think, one, she's the right individual to attract investment in sport.
Yeah.
two, I think she, at the start at least, she commands a certain level of respect. And you'd just hope that that can translate into into something. Though obviously there's a huge challenge, and you're right. You know, there's sport in Zimbabwe is extremely corrupt, extremely corrupt.
And how do you take away? Because ICC gives Zim Cricket about $24 million a year. If you started looking where that money goes. plays for Zim Cricket International Bank. If you actually listen to the stories about where that money goes, and if she even begins to unearth some of those things, these are your Ozias Butiers of the world. These are people who are politically connected. Is she going to be an activist in that role, or she's going to be passive and just smile and go to the events and be essentially a tourism ambassador? That's the real question.
So now this is what needs
she should be on December.
Well, no, it's who is, I want to know, what I'd be interested to know is who suggested her in terms of appointment, and who does she get to lean on to get things done? Because she needs to have an ally, whether it's, you know, the president or the vice president, but she needs to have an ally and say, this is what I'm trying to do. So and so is blocking me. How do I get through? If it comes to such a situation,
my
you know what I mean?
Like, there's some brilliant authors there working in OPC that got her and Sensei Seka Nzenza through. I think that my understanding is that it's through General Moyo and ED himself that these appointments got through. It's through OPC.
Well, then, you know, that's the first port of call, is whoever is there just needs to be making sure that when things need to get done, she has the right level of support.
Yeah.
And because you have people, the Chiangwas of this world, and all of those who are institutionally deep in some of these sporting institutions, that they tend to take advantage of them. Those people are going to have to be reined in. And if it needs the president himself to do it, then he needs to come bat for his team. He is the one at the end of the day who selected this team.
Yeah, because he's going to have a job, because he's in trouble. Just because time is moving, any other interesting things? I mean, obviously, there's the Dr. Obadiah Moyo and the stories coming through about his fake medical degree. It's not the first time we've had a fake doctorate or medical degree
in our cabinet.
My understanding is that even with that fake degree, he's been quite a competent manager at Chitungiza Hospital. He's just happened to lie. So no one can more opinion.
It wouldn't be a Zanu cabinet if there wasn't a dodgy degree.
in medicine from the University of Zimbabwe, a degree that the University of Zimbabwe has never offered.
I've heard good things about the way he's run Chitungiza Hospital. I've also, now obviously there's a lot of things coming out. Also to say that, you know, he essentially privatized the hospital and that's why it's run so efficiently. The first thing I'll say is I'm glad that David Parenyatu is no longer our Minister of Health. He'd been there for too long. He'd done
nothing.
He performed badly at his job. What I do hope, and I'm Obadiah Moyo, my knowledge of him and his work is limited, but I do hope that he is able to find a structure that works. There's a lot of things that our health sector needs. One, it needs doctors. Two, it needs medicine. Three, first thing it needs is money. So
yeah, I think his real job and what he's done well at Chitungiza Hospital is a lot of the funding and stuff that came through Chitungiza Hospital was through organizations like DFID. He's very astute at finding aid. And the Zimbabwean medical system have actually done, I wrote something for an assignment at some point, is primarily funded at the moment. And same education and health in Zimbabwe is largely funded through international donors, through DFID. I think DFID has put about $25 million per year in the last 10 years in our health system. And that's in the regime of sanctions. That's in the regime of we're not helping Zimbabwe. So there's an opportunity there to, because I'm not going to lie, I don't think that government has the capacity to fix the health system without outside mm-hmm. help. What they need to do is accept it. In the same way David Coulthard accepted educational help and managed to sort of resuscitate the education system by just going to donors. And they'll be very happy to do that. That's his job. I don't know if you have anything else. For me, I'm very...
Yeah, no, I think that's about it there. And I do hope that, you know, again, he's given the leeway to carry out some of these tasks. Yeah. And also support from other places, from the people within his ministry, and also just reorganize the different departments. So whether it's the medical control authorities of Zimbabwe and all these other boards, so that everyone is functioning at the same
level,
you know,
and he needs to manage expectations. He needs to be available because doctor strikes, right? They happen everywhere in the world. NHS yep. nurses strike, right?
Yep.
Doctors, it's managing expectations and being available. You need to be able yep. to talk to workers and explain why things can't happen. Dr. Paranyatwa is, you know, even without being a minister, was part of this family. He was too aloof. And he was bad at his job and also a thief.
And one of the things, I don't know if it's, you know, this falls under his ministry, but, and I think it's his as well as the public service ministry, Kwaseka Nzenza, is PISMAS. They're going to have to sort out that entire institution.
Yeah, the thing is, once they start, this is my problem with all these things, you know, we're working on time today, so we won't really go into it, is everything, once you start, right? It will eventually be a situation where too many people are being burned. So it needs to be a situation. I think where they're going, they need to just say, okay, guys, the eating has stopped. We're not going to look it back, but right now the eating has stopped.
Well, obviously the eating needs to stop, right? And
because if they start with PISMAS, you know where the PISMAS story goes.
You know better, Wakawanda.
That's why you cut the Dube, never went to jail.
You know better, Wakawanda. Auntie George Saramba has been asked about his PISMAS involvement as well.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Moving on, I'm very happy about Joel Big Mutiza. JBM is actually an urban planner by career. Mm-hmm. He was a lecturer at the University of Zimbabwe in urban planning, and he's Transport and Infrastructure Development Minister. That's a very good...
That's good a appointment good there.
Good appointment. Sekai Nzenza, I'm not too certain about her. I know she's an author. She's lived in Australia.
Well, she worked.
PhD in international relations.
She worked for World Vision as well. So, you know, she was in the NGO sector for a while. I think it's, you know, pulling in from that aspect. And for social welfare,
yes, but I don't understand about public service and labor. I thought you'd want a more, because that's, it's my salaries, and especially if the Minister of Finance decides to fire people, she's going to have a hell of a job on her hands, dealing with my redundancies, dealing with my payments, dealing with my lawsuits, and yep. you know what I mean? Social welfare, yeah, I understand, no. and but in terms of that public service commission, which falls under a ministry, she's in trouble there.
Only disappointment for me, Joram Gumbo. Not only, but one of the biggest ones, Joram Gumbo. I don't see his value, especially any energy and power development. That's a big one for us.
Yeah,
that's, you know, that's a key economic ministry.
Yeah.
Women
Affairs and Small Medium Enterprises. She's been there forever. She's a dinosaur. She's done nothing. She's not going to bring anything new. That was an opportunity missed. I think Fortune Chasu should actually have gone, maybe not Women Affairs, but Small Medium Enterprises or Community, if you had to. But I think, you know, you could
even, you know, who could have done it as well is Rajesh Modi.
Yeah. But
who's the Deputy Industry and Commerce?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's a doubling up of roles because that's what Modi knows. That's what he's going to be doing. So I understand the need to have a Women Affairs ministry, but I definitely don't think that appointment was necessary. OPA at Defense and War Veterans. Look, she's a senior member of the party. She's a war veteran. She's a woman. She obviously is not going to be calling anything about defense, but she's, you know, it's.
I think it's a good, you know what, I think it's a good appointment in the sense that I was very worried about Chiwenga. And one of the things that this does, it removes him from Defense House. That's the first thing. But also, it gets somebody who they, you know, ED knows is loyal. You want loyalty in defense. Defense is a key area. And, you know, now I think...
Does it really remove him from defense, from Defense House when Victor Matemadala is a deputy?
Yeah, but you see, Matema Danda is a war veteran, and obviously they are in they are together in endeavors, but it removes physically, at least physically,
he's further away.
Removes him from the corridors. Like, he'll have to leave his office. Now he vacates. Now he has the vice president's office. So I think it creates a bit of distance. And hopefully there now is some level of distance and autonomy from him.
Yeah. And then that, sorry, just to time.
That's fine.
Then Monica Mtsangwa, I think ED basically appointed both Chris and Monica, assuming Kuti ministerial duties are spread, are shared via the bedroom. Because that ministry is now Information Publicity and Broadcasting Service. It's a very different ministry if you actually think about it.
That word.
Because she's now both the government official spokesperson as well as runs NBC and ATC. Yeah?
Well, what I've always known about this ministry is it really doesn't matter who the minister is as long as George Taramba remains the permanent secretary, because he really just runs that ship. But and on that point though, I'd like to take a look at who the permanent secretaries for these 20 ministries are. And
they're going to change.
And I think they are going to change. I know some of them have been retired or were retired a couple of months ago. It will be very interesting to see who is appointed, because that's where you also get an idea of how the systems are going to run. I think they do need to change.
That's why I'm afraid Kutambiso wa Borari Sinamweo, because there's a very distinct possibility that you're going to see an retired Emasho and a retired all being put in those ministries, because that what would make sense. That's what I would do if I was Chiwenga in my head, right? I understand how governments run. I've been on joke for the last 20 years, right? I would fight for control of the institutions. So I would say you can appoint whoever you want for cabinet, but if you have my person in your office, and this is just from, you know, having heard stories about how it is to work with a permanent secretary that doesn't like you in government. If you talk to David Coulthard about Fadzima Here's father and just have that conversation with him, he will tell you how difficult it is to work with a belligerent permanent secretary. So if we then see an retired general, an retired air marshal, an retired army commander being put in these permanent secretary roles, then you know, Kuti, this was a smart and brilliant compromise that they came to in terms of the optics of it.
Yeah, no,
and
quite
it
right.
will keep everyone happy. And maybe I don't know. This is, you know, look, I'm very happy about this ministry. I really hope this cabinet. Sorry, I really hope they're allowed to work. Anyone who is, I mean, once bitten, twice shy, and I can understand why you wouldn't trust ZANU. I don't trust ZANU. I know institutions need to change for anything to actually happen, but it's individuals that change institutions. It's not institutions just don't change overnight. I think if there's enough, if it's a situation where Politburo is being run from OPC, from government, Sheikh House is being run from the government in the same way Thabo Mbeki ran Luthuli House from the government houses, is fine. But if it's the other way around, if it's a Jacob Zuma situation where Luthuli House is running government houses, then we're in trouble. But
and that's a big threat, because you have the Chinamasas, the Obed Mpofus, and Super Mandwaziras who are no longer in cabinet but could end up, you know, having senior positions in the Politburo. Obviously, some of them already do. And who then has the control?
Yeah.
What what is more important is the cabinet or Politburo giving instruction. Exactly. And that's where, you know, those are some of the big issues.
That's the distinction that we haven't had in Zimbabwe, where, you know, even the days Politburo would sit on what Tuesday and cabinet.
On right? Wednesday. Politburo would sit on Wednesday when ministers were supposed to be answering questions.
Yeah. So if small things like that don't happen, if they don't happen, if those things don't change, then essentially we've got window dressing. And I'm sure they will change gradually, but
I must say I am glad though that Superman once is not a minister.
For those who are sensitive in hearing, please cover your ears, but fuck Superman. And I'm so happy.
Wow. I was shocked. That was a big shock for me, to be fair, of people left out. I'm quite glad. And then obviously the Obits and Chinamasa, Parrenia.
But people don't realize how toxic Superman was behind the scenes. Like Super was all these old Madaras, you sort of give them not even a break. I mean, I hate, like, you, it's not okay, but they offer certain ilk and a certain generation, right? Oh, you can't look good in a suit and be such a thief. That's why I don't like Terence Mukupa. I don't like Super because it's wrong. Okay, it's wrong.
No, but you know what? It for me the big thing about them was this is not that Madara generation.
Yeah, it's more dangerous.
Generation
it's
below.
More dangerous. And that's why Super is so wealthy, because he's dangerous.
Exactly. It's the culture that just perpetuates. And then below that, you had upcoming the Chipangas and the ACs of this world. Zimbabwe was going to be in the worst place.
Yeah, I hope ACs fortunes fall with Super. Remember that recording that Super sent to AC to record? What's his name? To record James Magam.
JCJ. Auntie AC is now of the church.
I don't know what Magam do.
No, I think I can end up Sabata. I saw him getting baptized. But that's a story
but
for
I think
another
that's
day.
Only because he wanted to marry his baby mama. Anyway.
Oh, is it?
Anyway, look, AC has been. Anyway, look, let's keep moving. Sorry, just on a note to. I know Ali probably doesn't listen to this, but there was this big argument about the University of Sussex and how it's a bad university. Melanie Robinson, our new ambassador, is an alumni of the University of Sussex. So
why was there a discussion about.
Someone, I think, what's his name? That journalist went
Naba.
To, was arguing with Ali Naga and said I went to the University of Sussex. I've flown to London a lot of times. Then Ali said, "What is the University of Sussex? It doesn't produce academics. It's nothing." So I'm just saying, if Mkaba should have known, could he the new.
Interestingly enough, just the president of Costa Rica, the new president, and the minister from Botswana, the 31-year-old.
Mm.
They both went to the University of Sussex. It's actually got quite a big alumni.
So you should have pointed that out, but I know Vangovaro. People are laughing at him now. It was Ali. If they put Ali at ZBC, I'm going to be angry.
I honestly don't know. I saw that, you know, creep up on the timeline. I think I'm going to do some investigations and we can find out about that.
All right, we've done about 40 minutes, so let's see. Gaga, gaga. Sorry to everyone who are rushing through things. We're just trying something new.
So the MDC
Alliance.
Obviously Alliance. The Alliance. Obviously their principal, Nelson Chamisa, rejected the court ruling. The Constitutional Court ruling that declared Emmerson Mnangagwa duly appointed president of Zimbabwe over this whole V11 thing, and now he has come out and said that what exactly is he saying? He says we shall take action. He hasn't quite said what the action will be, but they held their first rally yesterday, which was Saturday. Today's what? Today's Sunday. What's the
Today's
date?
Sunday.
The
9th? Sunday the 9th of September.
9th of September. So they held their first rally yesterday, and essentially, you know, he said that they've rejected the results and they shall be making decisions based on what it is that the people want, and that an illegitimate government, he tweeted, an illegitimate government cannot set up a legitimate cabinet, even if you have two good apples and the rest are rotten. And then
I think you go ahead.
I was going to say on the flip side is ED had an opinion or an article in the Guardian in which he was extending an invite to Nelson to be the leader of the opposition, and I think that would now be an official appointment in whatever capacity, whether they add it to the constitution or they set it up somehow through parliament, because obviously Chamisa is not a parliamentarian. He wasn't elected to parliament. So he has no standing in the house.
Which is why that argument about the minister of state in Harare has been left open for some sort of deal is pertinent.
Yeah, I think so.
But I mean, look, he definitely put himself in a corner, and he, oh man, let's see how honest I want to be. The problem with the MDC alliance and the problem with the MDC has been that it has put itself in a corner with certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And while there's genuine belief, and I do have genuine belief, that the election was far from free and fair, that the election was far from a level playing field, the discussion now needs to be, how do you move forward? Now, one opinion is you simply concede and you keep going. Another opinion is that, as we've seen, people's memories are fairly short. So going around doing a thank you tour and a consultation tour is essentially a way of leaving structures. And it shows Chamisa in his best light, essentially. That's what he's good at. When he was organizing secretary, 2013, he was. If you compare organizing secretary right now, who's been running all these rallies, and Chamisa, you can tell the difference in what an organizing secretary does, and how your skills are used. So putting Chamisa in front of rallies is your best foot forward. But now the job of building structures. So I think they're slowly walking themselves from the brink in a Raila Odinga way, because Odinga does, they're fairly close. Do I agree with that plan? Do I agree with that? No. Simply because horses for courses. You need to be more adaptive in your criticism. You need to be more adaptive in your plays. The problem is, with too many Arsenal fans, you are like Arsene Wenger, who says we will win when we play like we play. Whereas if you're playing a different team, you can no longer play like you play. You have to adapt to what's happening and win that way. But you know, I think they are more of the opinion that we'll play how we play. And the problem is now is you have a semblance, and I'll keep it short, you have a semblance of the moral justification for your position when you genuinely believe you're in the right. It makes it a lot more difficult for you to accept anything but your way. When you are basing your whole entire political identity on the moral upper ground, it's very difficult to compromise, because essentially that means you're compromising your principles, you're compromising your morality. And that's the position they put themselves in, and they have to find a way to get out of that. More importantly, what I'm more concerned about is what's happening in the youth league. That's the real fight. Is Vondo going to take control of the youth league? Is General Sharing Consensus going to take control of the youth league? Are you going to see these young guys come through, these young, smart, brilliant guys who we saw come out in the elections? Ostalos, you know, Anatawande Moyo, actually, I shouldn't even, he wasn't even there, he was just drinking. And I'm Marco. But I mean, generally, that's where the real fight is. There's an ideological fight for the youth league. And there's an ideological fight for the party as well. His leadership credentials are going to be super challenged.
I think
in keeping the essentially the vanguard MDC versus the revolutionary, you know, EFF-like model youth intelligentsia that's there. Yeah. He surrounded himself with those Wafana, but they don't have any political base. They simply were close to him because they're smart.
Yeah.
But the kids with political base, the people with political base, besides Joanne, are all in parliament and upward. All those people.
Yeah.
How do they go forward from that? And that's why their real fight is ZANU-PF, until 2023, it's going to be in parliament and it's going to be in the newspapers. And right now, they win the newspapers.
Yeah.
They need to fix in-house.
So now this is the thing, is that you're right on this fighting the moral fight, but to what end? How long does this last? How long do you keep people in election mode? And this is what you've done with your supporters, right? But as things go on, so parliamentarians were sworn in, and parliament will open on the 25th of September. And it will be Emmerson Mnangagwa who opens parliament, who you say is an illegitimate president, right?
But your parliamentarians will be there. But they've been sworn in when parliament opens. If they go, that's a terrible decision. But they've already been sworn in. They don't have to be there.
That's true. They don't have to be there.
Because they've already been sworn in. Them missing that day has nothing to do with the parliament is run. They've already been sworn in. They're duly elected. They're sworn in. So they should.
Yes,
they shouldn't be there.
I completely agree. But then it. If they don't go, and then they go to subsequent sessions, right? Or they go to ministers' question and answer, you are then acknowledging that the people appointed as ministers are the ministers.
Yeah, I'm just saying in terms of optics, so, it's now no longer that level is cool. We agree on that level completely. They've already legitimized the illegitimate, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Because if they were fighting results, they should have fought all of the results. But I'm saying, just the optics of having a half-empty house, the opposite.
Oh, yes.
So every time Emerson is there, they can just say, we don't accept you as president. That's cool. But in terms of running a parliament, we can.
Obviously, they can do that in terms of the optics. But where does this end? What exactly is Chamisa's... What is he looking for? What is he looking to happen, in the sense of, he went the legal route and the legal route shut him out. If he goes demonstrations, which he is obligated to do, for how long is that going to happen?
Yeah, and that's why, in my humble opinion, I think that he needs to walk himself back off the ledge with these rallies, and I think his rhetoric is going to... He's going to do the theatrics of a self-inauguration. Same with Raila Odinga. That's what I see. He'll do those theatrics, which, look, whatever. You know, essentially, it's what happens. It's African politics. Now we must expect the same thing from the opposition as we expect from the ruling party. And that's what's just going to keep happening. Mm-hmm. What I know is powerful is in terms of the fact that he knows now that especially in Harare and Bulawayo, he can organize a demonstration, which makes the parliamentarians a lot more powerful when there's unpopular policy, particularly if the economy stays at this level. So he needs to know that he can wield that power. And I'm not talking about peaceful demonstrations. I'm just talking about just demonstrations. I'm not talking about the 7th or the 1st of August. I'm not talking about that level of demonstration because I genuinely don't think that's okay or that should ever happen again. Particularly the reaction, but he's in that position where if he accepts the leader of the opposition power position, right, his duty is now to keep them honest and as a last resort, organize, because there will be times where it's necessary.
Obviously.
When we were marching against bond notes, the MDC under Tsvangirai should have been forefront and center, but they weren't.
Yep.
You were there.
I completely agree.
But they weren't there. Yeah, how could someone from the hell be there? But decisions like the bond note should no longer happen without the opposition putting their foot down and saying no.
And then so you think he should accept like a Malema role?
It's now de facto, it's now de jure, it's happened.
He's yet to come to terms with that.
He will eventually. And it's now, and once the people in parliament start working, you have brilliant orators. Joanne Arnold Tukamboko. Joanne, like, you have people who in parliament can, because there's now social media, there's now, these videos are going to come out. You've got actually a powerful weapon. Your voices be heard. You know, I can't wait to see, SB Moyo being told off by TB in parliament if they come to question time. And those are the things you need to do.
I think those are some of the things that actually what's interesting is who's going to be elected Speaker of Parliament.
We have about 10 minutes to go, guys. It's going to be an hour long.
I agree on those things for the MDC, and it's interesting to see what happens yet. I do honestly think that, one, they need to sort out what the alliance actually is. I think they should go to a Congress, elect everyone that needs to be elected, finalize the party structures, and then, move forward and say, what is our role going to be?
Do you know?
Now, obviously, because, as you said, it's de facto. De jure, this is what it is. Now you need to actually establish yourself.
Do you know where he should be having thank you rallies? In Uzumbambranga Fumu, in Mutoko. Because those 8,000 people, those 9,000 people that voted for him in UMP are the bravest people in Zimbabwe. Which you do not have Nabasa, Munwese is an MDC supporter. Those are the places you should be going and saying, there were 500 of you in this constituency.
Well, didn't he say that I was in Chikomba and I was in this place?
Yeah,
people told me Kuti.
Look, put it on live stream it and we'll believe you. But that's where you should be. That's where you should be. No one cares in Chitungiza. Chitungiza is, they obviously love you there. Go to UMP again. Sure. Go back there and say, okay, Juan, you voted for me. We were Zagabiwa. Even if you keep saying that narrative, Zagabiwa. But thank you so much. We're not leaving you. This is after the election, we're here. And do it once or twice a year until 2023 and see how many people come.
And see what changes.
We were speaking about Speaker. Apparently, Speaker doesn't have to be a member of Parliament.
It doesn't,
That's tricky.
Not really. I just wonder who they'll appoint. To be fair, it could happen, but hasn't he been Speaker before?
I think you're the one person that's very happy that he's no longer a minister, is Patrick.
I think so too.
I genuinely think he genuinely could not be bothered.
I think so too. I think Anganita.
Patrick was just like cutting a lonely finger.
It was tough.
You're saying, sorry?
No, I wonder who they'll appoint as Speaker, how strict the Speaker will be. I think this, whoever's elected Speaker needs to be a partisan Speaker. In the sense of, ministers need to get sanctioned for not coming to question time. That's just it. Like, there's certain things that the House shouldn't allow to happen. And if we have a strong House, and obviously ZANPF has 2/3 in the one side of it and not in Senate, but if we have a strong House, or one that is, I like the fact that you have the Themba Mlisos there, because Themba likes controversy, lives for controversy.
And that's the thing, you have a lot of young Anaozie's Vute, these people out to make a name for themselves. TB are out to reassert their position. So debate is going to be lively. Now the big question is, what is ZANU's legislative agenda? And that's something a competent opposition will be asking. I'm just seeing from here, beginning of parliamentary year, that's the big debate. That's on the news. That's everything they're talking about, is what is the ruling party's legislative agenda this year? And they will put their priorities. Oh, we want Medicare, we want to do tax reform, to do this. And then already the ideas are being debated. And that's something that we need to start. Because
one thing that I hope that the new parliament champions and the parliamentarians actually, you know, get on Ziyambi's neck or this is aligning our laws to the constitution. That is something that needs to happen, and that is something that needs to be talked about regularly, so that it's actually being done. Because a lot of the loopholes exist simply because our laws aren't aligned, and we need to sort those things out.
And the parliamentarians also need to understand what those, you know what I mean? There needs, at least now there's some information, but there needs, what's missing is these retired justices, these legal experts shouldn't be so part, and I love Muma Dugu, shouldn't be running for president. They should be writing opinion piece after opinion piece of what the law is on all this alignment, because it's very difficult to align laws that will only be understood in the context of a court case. So it's very difficult to align, like, this is a very simple example and it's a very obvious example, right? But the constitution says, you know, marriage is between a man and a woman aged 18 and above, right? And the reason it was put that way is to stop, you know, men and men or women and women marrying.
Yeah.
But the Marriage Act says marriage is between two consenting adults or with the consent of the parents, people under the age of 16 or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That wouldn't come up until a situation where you try and marry off a child, and then she says, no, I can't constitutionally be married. And that's a very simple, it's a very simple basic example, but there's so many more complex ones that the conflicts aren't even apparent until they are challenged in court and in the constitutional court. And going to constitutional court is so expensive that the legislators, and it's difficult, even, you know, constitutional lawyers don't even know the law, as we saw by Fulton Prickham and Clinton.
Well, so this is now from what you're saying, and what we need, and I don't know if there's a provision for it in the constitution or if such a body exists, but we need a law review commission. We need people who are actually hired to sit down, look at our laws, and make sure through the Justice Ministry or whatever.
That's what the Ministry of Justice should be doing.
You obviously, this is a lot of work. Huh?
Yeah.
So you want to set up an actual body that is
aligning. That's their role. Could you? We've got these 500 legislation, 500 pieces of legislation to align, 200 pieces of legislation to align. This is the order we're doing in them. And it's simple things. Sometimes it's just languaging. It's just language.
And you're sitting down, and if you're appointing Maduku to say, Maduku, you are the, you know, chair of the commission or whoever you're finding and saying, right, sit down. This is your team of however many people you need. Get to work.
Yeah.
And then produce it. I think that's what needs to happen.
I think that last line is what we just basically to conclude the podcast for the cabinet. Get to work, guys. Get to work. Those that are mirachit, chungo shandai. Atsuda my excuses. You have a brilliant cabinet. We don't want to hear any nonsense anymore. Just get to work.
I hope that the media, and this is going out to my big pal Caesar Jai, holds these guys accountable. The time for sycophancy is long gone. Yeah. Now it's time to get to work as well, in the sense of actually, you know, making sure that the things that they say are the things that they do.
Yeah, and that's it. And that's the thing is, look, there's this, people, we don't need, Zimbabwe doesn't need a positive attitude. As important as people would say that is, we don't need a positive attitude. We need transparency, we need integrity from the people in power. I don't have to feel positive about the outlook of Zimbabwe for Zimbabwe to do well. Stop telling us to be positive. We just need transparency, integrity, and hard work from the people that have been voted into power. What my attitude is on the country should not affect the outlook of the country. I don't care who you are. Yeah, and that's my simple argument is that that's it. We just need people to do their jobs and to work hard. my attitude will eventually change. If I'm not even talking about my personal change. I'm just talking about the narrative around the negativity around Zimbabwe. That's wrong.
Yeah.
People should be more concerned about what their leaders are doing than what the supporters are doing.
And that's that. Actually, and that, yeah, well, this is a whole different thing, but I completely agree. And yeah. We should all just, you know, put our heads down and get to work. Those that are in positions to do so.
Yeah. And that's
full
it.
Stop.
Stop retweeting someone with 50 followers and saying, look at the state of opposition supporters. Look at the state of Zimbabwe. No one cares. You guys are in power. Do your jobs.
Yeah, I know. That's that. Anyway, right. On that note.
Thank you so much. Do your jobs, guys. Even Mimi, if you're Ikoko, which... Kwauri Ikoko, where you're listening.
Kwauri Ikoko, do your job. Iwewe. Iwewe, do your job.
I'm talking to John. I'm sure there's a John who listens. You, John. Na Samson. Na Love More.
Vese.
All right, cheers, guys.